go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could tune in and join us for the next 60 minutes as we'll break down everything related to the New York Giants. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in via social media using hashtag GiantsChat. And we want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. In a few minutes, J.J. Joe, former Baylor quarterback, he is now the radio analyst for Baylor, will be joining us to break down the Baylor prospects. But, Paul, before we get to that, the players are officially back in the building. It is April 11th. It is the start of the offseason programming, and the Giants have added three new players today.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because when I saw the guys down the hall, they're just buzzing like bees in that weight room. Let me tell you.
You are as well.
we're seeing some new faces around here. Now, this morning, the Giants have officially announced the signing of three guys, two of who announced on no social media that they were already coming.
Yes.
So no surprise with them. We would have Kelvin Shepard, linebacker who played for the Miami Dolphins. He's a guy in the middle. You have Bobby Rainey, a running back. He's a scat back and a kick returner who played with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And you have offensive tackle Byron Stingley, who had some time with the Tennessee Titans, also was on the roster a short time with the Steelers last year. He was the surprise because he did not announce on social media that he was coming this morning.
He kept it secret. So he was the pleasant surprise of the group. So they had three different positions. Just a few more news and nuggets. Bobby Rainey has a connection to offensive coordinator Mike Sullivan. They were together in 2013 with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That was actually Rainey's best statistical season, mainly because he got a lot of usage. Last season, he wasn't necessarily jumping off the page in terms of his numbers because they utilized Doug Martin a lot in Tampa Bay. He was really their workhorse. But I think you brought up a good point. He's a special teamer. And depending on how the roster plays out, this is a player that's had a lot of experience returning punts and kickoffs, so he could be somewhat of a security blanket.
You know, the way I see it, to me, he's kind of an insurance policy because if the Giants do need, let's say, Dwayne Harris to be more of a receiver again, now, well, Reuben Randall's gone, so he's not going to be returning punts. And I don't really think they want to beat up Shane Vereen returning kickoffs either. So Rainey could find a niche here, potentially, as a special teams guy if things shake out a certain way. And then there's also a way that, you know, he could be the backup third down running back. Because I think that as much as the Giants like Williams and Darkwa and Rashad Jennings, none of those guys truly have that third down scat back ability that Vereen has. And so, you know, if Vereen should go down for any reason, Rainey certainly would be in the mix to compete and step up potentially as the third down scat back. So I see him having a chance to make the team. If he makes it, I don't know. If he does, I think there are a couple of areas where he could fit. Now, the other two guys, Shepard, will be in competition with Brinkley and with Robinson at the middle linebacker spot. You would believe that Robinson's probably going to be the starter since they signed him first and then went and filled in the other guys behind him. But the good news is they got some versatility there because, for example, Robinson can play on the outside if they need him to. And, of course, we know that Derek Kennard has an injury history, so don't ignore that. And then you also know that Shepard could potentially if he had to do. So they've tried to fill in some depth here, the way I see it, some experience depth. And then as far as Byron Stingley is concerned, to me, hey, the more offensive linemen you can bring to camp, the better, because let those guys compete and just let the best guys make the roster. There's nothing wrong with bringing in competition.
Stingley replaced Michael Orr in Tennessee when Orr left to sign with Carolina, so he became their main tackle out there. And then, obviously, as you mentioned, he went to Pittsburgh because the Steelers suffered so many injuries last season. They needed bodies.
They had nobody.
Correct. So he's been, you know, moving around throughout the course of his NFL tenure. But, you know, it's interesting you brought up the point about the more bodies you bring in, the more competition you have. And let's not forget, you know, they have an opportunity to get to 90 guys. You have to fill out the roster.
Yes.
So that's not necessarily the surprise that they're adding others. And Kevin Gilbride, when the assistants were talking to the media, you really took the words right out of Kevin Gilbride's mouth, Paul, because he was asked about, and I'm not trying to go off topic here, but he was asked about the importance of maybe bringing in a veteran tight end. And Kevin Gilbride's answer was, at this point, it doesn't matter who we bring in. The more, the better competition you have. At any position, it's not just the tight end positions. Everywhere, you foster competition. And that's exactly what the Giants are looking to do right now.
Well, there's no question. And remember, by the time you open the season and you've got your active 53, the idea is to improve on as many of those roster spots as you can from the time you ended last season. And if you've improved roster spots 50, 51, 52, and 53, well, you know what? There's value in that. And it doesn't mean that, you know, every free agent you sign or every draftee you draft has to be a starter or even a rotational player. He could simply be a backup player. He might even be a guy who doesn't dress on Sunday, Lance.
Correct.
But if he was better than the guy whose spot he took last season, you have improved your team. Even if it's incrementally, you've improved your team.
Well, and that's what we talked about going back to last season, Paul, the depth. You know, we focus so much on the 11 starters on offense and defense, but, you know, you make or break your team based on who the complementary pieces are. Case in point, Jasper Brinkley, for example, signed with the Giants, what, a few days before the opener last season.
Was not expected to do anything.
Correct.
And he started the whole second half of the season.
And turned out to be a key playmaker.
He's pretty
good.
Because
he was extremely opportunistic, a big reason why they brought him back. So those are the type of players you're looking for right now. The players that maybe still be dangling out there on the free agent market that you could bring in will compete and perhaps surprise you, whether it be during training camp or whether it be during the preseason.
And, you know, I like what some people talk about when they address these kinds of players. They say, well, risk-reward. And the truth of the matter is these guys are not breaking your bank. You know, these are guys who are fill-in guys. You're not spending a whole ton on them. And you know what? You roll the dice and you hope they improve your team a little bit. And if they become something more than that, the more the merrier.
It's a bonus, absolutely. Shepard, who you mentioned, does play the middle linebacker position, started 13 games of
yes.
the 16 last year. So he was used as a primary starter with the Dolphins. He's obviously a teammate of Olivier Vernon, so he has some familiar faces that he's going to recognize here with the Giants. So that's exactly what the Giants were bringing in over the last few weeks, a couple of more middle linebackers to compete for a spot that is really left open at this point with the retirement of John Beeson. You know, you mentioned Keenan Robinson, I think, is the favorite, but I would not overlook Brinkley based on the comfort level that he had within Spags'
sure.
defense.
Sure. I mean, I think they're going to fight for the job. Now, Robinson, again, being he was the first free agent who was brought in before Brinkley was brought back, you'd think he probably has a small edge there. But I don't think you discount Brinkley. I think you go into the camp and say it's a competition, and whoever wins the snaps. And that's just the way it's going to be. And same thing goes for the Mark Kurzlicks and the Yuani Youngers of the world, who were holdovers. Hey, guess what? It's competition. If you prove that you deserve to be a backup on this team, if you prove that you deserve a roster spot and you can hold off those guys, well, then you'll be here.
And that's the name of the game. It'll be interesting to see how many linebackers they ultimately keep. Six is usually the number that you target in terms of having your three starters and your three backups. But right now they got a number of guys in the mix that are going to be competing for starting jobs as well as backup spots. Well, we want to certainly thank all of you who are watching on Twitter. But you can continue to watch the show each and every weekday here on Giants.com as we welcome in that audience here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Baldettino. I'm Lance Meadow. Number of new signings that the Giants have added today, in case you're just joining us. So that's exactly what we're discussing right now. It is also the start of the off-season program. And it's important to note, Paul, you know, there are so many different elements and layers to this off-season program. Right now, they're simply lifting weights. There's not much work being done in terms of the X's and O's and so forth. You know, this is where you start to get in shape, and then you slowly make your way into the classroom and sort of other things.
Well, this is what's called phase one of the NFL offseason program, and these guys are allowed to look at plays. They can look at the playbooks. They can look at the videos. They can do that kind of stuff. They're not allowed to go out on the field. They can't go out there with the coaches. They can't go out there with a football. They can't do any of that stuff while they're here. Now, on their own, they can go to a high school field and throw if they want, but that's it. I mean, there are so many.
Well, they
can
go to your backyard, too, and that's allowed.
Hey, they want to catch passes from me, that's fine. Bottom line is, there are so many restrictions based on the new CBA from a few years ago that everything is spelled out in detail as to exactly how limited these things are. You are right, though. Incrementally, as we get into phases two and three, and we actually get to the mini camps, now you're going to be able to actually see a little something from these guys on the field. But right now, they're all in the weight room, like I said, buzzing like bees. And that doesn't tell you a whole lot.
But I think this period is important because...
Well, you want
them
to be here.
Correct. You definitely want them to be here.
It's voluntary, and you do want them to be here.
You do.
If they can be.
Well, especially since there's a number of new faces in the mix
now,
too. On top of that, there's also a lot of new coaches. So I think it's important, while there's not a lot of classroom work, just the meet and greet aspect, Paul. Because all the players are now in-house for the first time after a rather busy offseason.
Well, you were here, as I was, to meet the assistant coaches for the first time when they had a media session just a week and a half ago. And how many of those new coaches said to us, when we started asking them about them, they were like, okay, that's fine, but as far as the players, we haven't seen them. Haven't met them, haven't talked to
them. Maybe a phone call.
Maybe a quick phone call, and that's about it. I mean, I remember Bill McGovern, the linebackers coach, was animate about, hey, I said to him, the linebackers here, you know, you got a bunch of new faces coming in, and it's going to be, you know, really hard for you to acclimate yourself quickly because everybody's going to be new, you know? And he's like, I haven't met any of these guys yet. He said, I've watched tape. That's great, but I got to meet these guys. I got to find out what makes them tick. I got to find out about them as people. I got to find out about what they want to do on the field. And he's like, everybody has a clean slate with me because I got to find out. And, you know, hopefully that's a good thing.
Adam Henry said something similar because he was asked about how much interaction he's had with Victor Cruz, who's been here working out
exactly.
The offseason. And he said, you know, very little interaction, just, hey, how you doing? Looks good. But once he gets onto the field, that's when they're really going to get to know each other.
I did think, though, good thing about Alex Henry was that he had remained in touch with Odell Beckham since their days at LSU together. And in fact said that last year, not this past season, but the previous year when Odell was a rookie and he had been injured, Henry said that he had remained very close to Odell because Odell was really mentally hurting because he couldn't get on the field thanks to the hamstring injury.
The first few weeks of that season.
And Henry remained very close to him during that rookie season. And I think that's a good thing because you would hate to think that they brought in his former coach from college and that there had been any kind of disconnect. I like the fact that Henry's already hit the ground running with Odell, that they have been connecting throughout the course of his pro career.
Well, clearly because of the connection, you know, you certainly like to hear that. And he also, I thought, was interesting when he spoke to the media. He was talking about his approach because of how great Beckham's been in his first 2 years, but starting from scratch, almost as if like he doesn't know Beckham, the basics, the fundamentals when they first get out on the
right.
field.
Coaching-wise.
Coaching-wise. You know,
yes.
Say, hey, you know, we may have had history together, but I got to evaluate you now, not necessarily what I know what you were capable of doing or what you already accomplished.
Well, he was very, very animate about it. He's got to treat all the receivers in the receiving room the same way. Because he's got to come in and he can't let anybody be up on a pedestal. No matter what Odell has done, you know, you don't want the other receivers in that room thinking he's getting preferential treatment. That's just not going to work, especially for a new guy coming in because he has to establish respect and credibility. So, you know, he was very clear about that. He's going to treat him as all the other wide receivers. But I do think that from a personal level and from an interaction level, it is helpful that as Odell Beckham continues to mature and become more and more of a pro, and hopefully for the Giants' sake and the players' sake, continues to grow and get better. I still think that's possible, believe it or not, that he's got somebody who he has already established a comfort zone with.
And speaking of that, in terms of starting fresh and treating everybody like they're brand new, it was interesting listening to Dave Merritt, the longtime safeties coach,
mm-hmm.
and he talked about when the staff met with Ben McAdoo for the first time. McAdoo made it very clear everybody's a new hire on this staff. Even though there are some carryovers from Tom Coughlin's tenure, he made it very clear everybody's a new hire. He's trying to treat it as if it's a brand new staff, as opposed to, I have a history with certain guys, I don't have a history with other guys, and so forth. So that was interesting, because the reason why Merritt brought that up is he felt as if it's a clean slate from everybody. Nobody's carrying baggage over for what had occurred in the previous tenure.
Well, I think you want to do that because there's a sense of renewed energy around here with the half a dozen or so new assistant head coaches that have been brought in. I think that, you know, they're excited to get going, and I think the holdovers are excited to kind of see what these new guys bring to the table. And if you're going to get caught in a mentality of, well, you know, we're kind of set in our ways and we're not going to be enthused or invigorated by these new, fresh ideas, then you're doing yourself a disservice because, quite frankly, that's part of the reason why the new guys are here, is to help make things, shake them up, and help make things better if they can be better.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your tweets. We'll also get to your phone calls. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. The offseason program is officially underway here on this Monday, April 11th. The players are back in the building working out in terms of the weight room. Let's open up the phone lines. We want to hear from you. And T is in Maryland to get us going. T, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, Lance?
Hi.
And Paul? Hey, good talking to you guys. I've been listening for a while.
Great.
I just wanted to say, I thought about something that Paul said last week. Was talking about what George Young used to say, draft to the strength. When you draft to the strength of the draft.
Yes.
And that got me to thinking. I was thinking, I said, well, you know what? Paul is real enamored with this, you know, getting an O-line. And I was like, okay, we could get the kid from Notre Dame, if he's still there, which I doubt, or we can get the kid from Michigan State, who might be there at 10.
Right.
Then I got to thinking, there's a kid out of Indiana and
Spriggs.
The one from UCLA that are really good tackles. And I was like, well, maybe we could go defense. And if Ezekiel Elliott's there, maybe we could go offense. I just wanted to get Paul's take on that, had he thought, which I know Paul did. He doesn't miss a stone. He doesn't leave any stone unturned. I've been following Paul forever. Like, I'm 41, and Paul Dottino is, like, embedded in my brain.
I'm sorry.
That might be dangerous, to be honest with you.
I'm very sorry.
I feel for you, T. That's not necessarily a good thing.
T, let me put it to you this way, okay? My opinion is that Ezekiel Elliott is not a good fit for the Giants because of a lot of factors. One is I really hesitate to take a running back that high just in principle. I understand he's supposed to be an all-around guy who can do a lot of great things, but I also believe that when you look at the overall impact that a player can make, a defensive player probably has a potentially longer lifespan as an impact player than a running back does in this league. The way the game is being played today, you know, if you have an impact running back and he can give you 4 or 5 years, you're feeling really good about it. A defensive guy, you might get 8, 9, 10 years out of him at a high level. The chances are he's probably going to last longer at a higher level. So for me, there's more value at pick number 10 of going in that direction. Same thing with the trenches and the offensive line. You draft a blue chip stud offensive lineman, he might be around for 12 years. And make 6 Pro Bowls. I mean, if he's that good, you can get a lot of mileage out of that pick at that position with that value. So I hesitate to even go for Elliott from the get-go, philosophically. Then I look at the Giants, and I do put that need component in there, and I say to myself, look, with this stable of running backs they have, I don't think that I'd go running back. I just don't. I think they've got enough guys that, look, offensively, they did a lot of good things last year. Now, you're going to tell me, well, the running game wasn't very good. Well, you're right, but that's more because of the line than it was the running backs, at least in my opinion. So that's my take on Elliott. I hope I've explained that. Now,
no, you did.
All right.
Hey, I just wanted to say thanks, you guys, and I love you both, and enjoy the rest of the show, and I'll be listening. But, hey, I really appreciate that, Paul, because I just wanted to get your take on it to see how you felt, because no one really asked that about that. So I wanted to get the nuts and bolts of why you felt that way.
Well, that's it. Those are my philosophical reasons why I'd go away from him, in addition to where the Giants stand in terms of what they need and what they should be looking for. Because I'll tell you what, they're going to be blue-chip guys available at several of their need positions. So you got to take one of those guys before you look to the running back.
I got you. Well, cool deal. Hey, thanks, Paul. Thanks, Lance. You guys
Hi,
have
team.
A great one.
You got it. Appreciate
Good to talk
the
to
phone
you.
Call.
You know, it's very interesting. A lot of people have been talking to me about Stanley and Conklin in the last week. Remember, we had Notre Dame and Michigan State guests on last week. And I'm starting to swing toward Conklin. I think Stanley, I do understand what the critics say about him, about potentially his physicality. He's probably going to be a better left tackle than a right tackle. And I could see where Conklin, because he's a mauler, is probably going to be a better right tackle than a left tackle. I do think that either player could play either side. I believe that. But the more I'm watching stuff, because I did some more tape work on Conklin over the weekend, and Stanley both, I do think Stanley is a better technician, but I do think that Conklin is more of a ferocious lion in a cage. And I'm thinking more and more that, you know, as I get down to the draft, if I'm the Giants, I just might go for Conklin over Stanley.
Well, Conklin's been skyrocketing up the board.
He really has.
Over the last few weeks and months as a result of what a lot of the experts see in him. I mean, I think that there is a little bit more maybe physical toughness from what you see out of Conklin, but I still think Stanley's got some versatility.
I love Stanley. He's consistent. He's got terrific athleticism. He's a technician.
Yeah.
I really like him a lot, and I think he is a top 10 player. I'm not so sure that Conklin isn't either, though. Just because, you know, he likes mustard on his hamburgers instead of ketchup, it doesn't mean that he's any less of a player, you know. And I don't know that he does, but I'm just using that as an analogy.
Well, it was interesting because John and I spoke to Dane Brugler, who comes out with his NFL Scout draft guide each and every year, Paul. And he actually, when we were asking about Stanley, you know, he thinks Stanley may actually wind up being overdrafted, which is what his term was.
Wow.
Not that he's not a good player, but he feels that maybe the hype is a little too much at this point compared to what you're ultimately going to get out of him, which was an interesting take.
He's really a solid, solid player, though. I don't know that you can overdraft him, especially at left tackle. Such an important position. But in any event, the point I make is I've been on Stanley's bandwagon for a lot of months, but as we're getting closer to the draft, I've dug a little deeper. I've talked to some more personnel people around the league. And again, there are as many people who almost think that Conklin's even or may even be a little better than Stanley as vice versa. Those who favor Stanley, and I do think there are a few more that do, favor him because he's going to be a left tackle, and left tackles are usually more of a premium. So I get that. I think right now, though, I'm really edging more for Conklin.
The question is, though, I think with Conklin, if you value him more at a right tackle position, and I'm all for you take the best player. I'm not really too worried about what position they're going to play. But, you know, the whole debate is if you're ultimately going to put him at right tackle and he's going to be a right tackle overall, are you getting enough bang for your buck at the 10th overall pick? I guess is what I'm throwing out
if
there.
If he plays a decade and starts for a decade,
you'll look back and you'll say, that's fine.
You got value.
Correct.
You know, you got value. And again, especially considering, and I'm of the opinion the Giants are right to leave Flowers at left. Because that entire swinging fence, that gate of Pugh and Richburg and Flowers, they really see value in keeping those three guys together. And if you really want to do that, then you really do have to draft the right tackle. And
who
Conklin
can have the ability, though, to play left
if you
need of a backup?
No question.
Or an injury situation.
No question.
That, I think, is important. If that mindset, and I can't blame them. Continuity is important, Paul. You know that better than anyone
sure
on the offensive line. So when you say that you think they see value in keeping the left side together, yeah, of course
they
should.
People don't. They keep telling me, I'll move Flowers back to the right.
How many times, though, are you going to move Justin Pugh around? I mean, what position hasn't he played yet?
I know.
Richburg's been
crazy.
Moved around. And then Flowers, in a rookie year, you got him to play left tackle, at least stay healthy for the most part. Now you want to, you know, continue this game of musical chairs. I don't think that really helps the longevity of the O-line.
I love when a fan says to me, well, didn't they move David Deal around all the time? It was out of necessity. You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You don't want to. You know, in a perfect world, you'd rather just plant these guys into the ground and let them grow roots.
Correct. Yeah, a lot of the guys that were moved around, it was because of the injury bug.
So
players were in and out of the lineup.
Anyway,
continue to head back to the phone lines here and appreciate the phone call, T. Andre's in Rochester. Andre, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, I just had a question about the Rain Man they just signed. Do you think Dwayne Harris will be moved to permanently wide receiver now that they signed him?
I don't think that necessarily indicates that Harris is going to be taken off of special teams. If anything, I think you have more options. And, you know, the Giants last season, Harris became pretty much an everyday down wide receiver as a result of the injury. So I think the Giants are of the mindset, if Harris needs to become that every down type of wide receiver, we may not want to wear him out. We may not want him to constantly return kickoffs and so forth. So therefore, you bring in a player like Rainey, who's an option that could be your return guy.
Yeah, strictly depth purposes, insurance purposes, and again, giving you more options, like Lance said. The one thing you do not want to do, if you wind up having to rely more on Harris as a receiver like you did last year, you do not want to be naked in the return game. And really, what are the options now? Again, Reuben Randall is gone, and he was your backup punt returner. And Shane Vereen was your backup kickoff returner. And I really don't think you want to be putting him in that situation. He's your third down back. He's a very important part of your standard offensive set.
And you don't want to constantly use Beckham in that position, too.
No.
Even though he's an option as well. You don't want to use all of these starters who you're relying on down after down.
But having said that, I don't think it's a lock that Rennie makes the team either. I think he's going to have to compete, come into training camp, earn a spot on the roster, and if he does, these are the kinds of things that he might be able to provide them.
But I will tell you this. I think Rainey, though, if he can play consistent special teams, that gives him an edge perhaps on some of the other running backs on this roster. Because versatility is something the Giants do value. If you can do multiple things...
Well, Darkwood does play specials, too.
Well, I'm just saying, though, I think Rainey may be over a guy like Andre Williams or somebody. Mm. And I'm not saying that, you know, somebody's on the bubble here, but you can maybe look at it from that perspective.
It is competition. That's the bottom
competition.
Line.
No doubt
and that's
about
good.
That.
Yeah, that pretty much blows the Ezekiel Elliott draft out the water, though.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't rule out Elliott. I wouldn't rule out Elliott Andre. I agree with Paul. I mean, if I were the Giants.
Six running backs in our squad.
Correct. I think from a numbers standpoint, you're in a healthy position where you have a lot of competition on your roster. But I don't necessarily look at the roster and rule out any position. Because remember, the Giants are always in the business of looking for the best player available. And if he drops and there's a drop-off between Elliott and talent at any other position, I would not rule Elliott out. From a need basis, though, I agree with Paul. I don't think running back is priority number one for this team entering the draft.
All right, thanks, guys. I'll let you guys go. And did you guys see that latest mock draft from the old man? Miles Jack, guys.
I think you referenced that.
Charlie Casserly from NFL Network yesterday posted his latest mock draft and had Miles Jack dropping to 10 and the Giants. This is the fourth mock draft in the last 2 weeks that I have seen that had Miles Jack dropping that far. I don't understand it.
I see a Super Bowl, fellas. I see a Super Bowl.
He's a top five player. He really?
I'll let you guys go.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate the call.
And trust me, if Miles Jack falls to 10, Anita's going to be setting off fireworks in New York Harbor because this guy is a primo player. He's got no business dropping to 10. And yet somehow we're seeing mock drafts by legitimate NFL people, including Charlie Casserly, who was saying that Miles Jack will drop to 10 to the Giants. That's a no-brainer for me. I cannot pass on Miles Jack if he's there at 10. I can't do it. He's too high on the board.
Despite even the injury concern, I mean, clearly he's the best overall talent at that position, at the linebacker position specifically. But, you know, regardless of the people putting these mock drafts and their backgrounds, remember, these are projections, and projections change in the blink of an eye day to day.
And a trade can totally shake it up.
I mean, I understand it's fun to look over these mock drafts, but we got a long way to go still with the draft. A lot of different things can take place before we get to the actual heart and soul of what's actually going to come.
I would add one thing, and this kind of goes to the previous caller, T, for just a second. When you're talking about the offensive tackles, Tunsil, Stanley, and Conklin are by far the best three prospects at that position in this draft. Those are the plug-and-play guys that you put right into the lineup, and they can play for you right away as rookies. Once you get after those three guys, there is a drop-off. Whether you're talking about Decker, or you're talking about Spriggs, you know, Ifedi, you're going down a little bit. There is a gap after those top three guys. Those top three, to me, are the only three tackles who should be in the top 12. So that's why, you know, we're talking so heavily about Stanley and Conklin, because you got to figure that Tunsil's going to be gone in the top two or three, and those other two guys may fall to the Giants. But after that, the rest of the tackles, to me, would not be a value pick at 10. I would not consider either one of the other guys, Spriggs or even Decker.
And just to put things in perspective, they have four mock drafts on NFL.com from their main experts.
Yeah.
Casserly's one of the four. Casserly, right now, in his latest mock draft, has Jack falling to the Giants at 10. But just to show you how things fluctuate in terms of the eyes and opinions of experts, Bucky Brooks has Miles Jack going fifth overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and at the 10th pick, he has the Giants taking Ronnie Stanley. Daniel Jeremiah has Miles Jack going seventh to the Niners. So we've had Miles Jack going 10th. We've had Miles Jack going fifth. We've had Miles Jack going seventh. And Ronnie Stanley going to the Giants. And then last, Charles Davis has Miles Jack also going fifth.
Yeah.
And then he has the Giants taking Kevin Dodd out of Clemson, who plays opposite Shaq Lawson. So it just goes to show you got four guys who work for NFL.com, and it's like this with Miles Jack. That's why, forgive me from getting overly worked up over all of these projections.
Well, I guess the only reason that I even address them is because what you want to do when you're going into a draft is you want to have some concept of, first of all, you look at the players, which is something I spend a lot of time doing. In fact, this weekend, oh my goodness, major league aspirin headaches. Just watch. I mean, I was really going to town. Really went to town this past weekend. Did so much. I'm almost done. I'm almost done now.
The light is at the end of the tunnel.
I've got strong safety and free safety left. Everything else is done. I've got all my notes. I've got my big stack of notes and everything. I'm almost ready to go. But what I'm saying is, to me, it's a multiple-step process. You grade your guys. You put together what you believe to be your evaluations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then as you're looking at the draft projections, it's not so much that you believe any individual draft projection, but what you would like to see is what's the range of where a player is going. Because you'd like to believe that fellow people who are covering this game for a living have at least some concept and clue as to not only how good the player is and what his value might be, but also what those other teams may or may not be looking for. So you like to say, okay, Miles Jack is between 5 and 10?
10, yeah.
Okay, so you know what? Chances are, if you're picking 15, again, we're just going
maybe
off of this
stretch.
Draft,
yeah.
15, you're not getting Miles Jack. You know what I mean? And that's kind of how you got to do it. So I'll be honest. I don't think I've ever seen any draft that has Miles Jack falling past the Giants at 10.
No, I have yet to see that as well.
That's as far as I've seen him drop.
He's definitely in the ballpark of 1 to 10. I think that's safe.
I think that's safe to
say. Where does he go? Is he more 1 to 5 or 5 to 10?
I still think he's top 5.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but we haven't really seen many 1 spots for Miles Jack.
No, we
have
not.
I haven't seen that. I haven't even seen 2s. Maybe 4s I've seen, I want to say that may be the highest.
I've seen as high as 3.
You've seen a 3? Okay. So, you know, 3-4 is probably that highest mark.
Honestly, could you blame either the Chargers or the Cowboys for taking him?
No, not at all. And I could make an argument that I think those two teams could use a linebacker.
I think so.
So, without a doubt, that makes sense. And Jacksonville is rebuilding its defense based on what it's done in free agency. Baltimore loves linebackers out of college based on what Ozzie Newsome does. The Niners, you know, that's a wild card.
They need linebackers.
They do, too. And the Eagles, you can make an argument also.
I would say this, and even the Bucs at 9. I would say this. After the first two teams, because you know what the Browns and Titans desperately need, and it's more than a linebacker, okay? Once you get to 3, from 3 to 10,
he could go.
You could make an argument for any one of those teams taking Miles Jack and not criticize them one iota if they select him.
Because it's a need, and it's also the best player available.
Exactly.
So, two birds with one stone. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow. We want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Nugs is in Minnesota. Nugs, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
Doing well, Nugs.
I wanted to chime in on what you guys have been talking about. There's no way that we'll get Miles Jack. If Miles Jack falls past all those teams that actually need linebackers to get to us, I wonder how much time those GMs have been spending in Denver, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, based on how that group performed this past season, yes.
Another thing I wanted to do was, do some fan stuff that I normally do. Did you guys get to check out Odell's cousins?
Teron Beckham. Yeah, who was a workout machine.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. If you love combine numbers and you love drills, you love Teron Beckham. Because if he was at the combine and you interpret his pro day numbers into combine numbers, you would probably have one of the top three running backs in this draft.
So what I was thinking was this. I'm not sure if that's enough to get him drafted because he didn't play any college ball or whatever. Maybe do you see a team maybe bringing him in as an undrafted free agent.
Without a doubt.
And maybe even could that be us? Maybe he could play the fullback for us. I don't think he could. I wouldn't see him. I wouldn't put him over Jennings or, you know, a guy that we actually drafted or signed, like Rainey or something like that. I wouldn't see that, but maybe he could be like a core special teamer and like a goal line guy, or maybe even play some fullback, maybe push Whitlock.
Here's the one thing you don't know. You don't know about his football instincts. Yeah. Actually, the other thing you don't know is about his heart and desire to play with contact. All we know right now is that in the underwear Olympics, he's a gold medal winner.
He's a strong guy.
There's no question about that. But you don't know anything about his ability to pick up a playbook, what his instincts are with the football, nor is he willing to get hit. And is he tough enough? Does he have a heart for the game? That stuff you don't know, and you won't know until you bring him to training camp. I would suggest that someone's going to give him a look because his measurables are too good to ignore. I mean, heck, there are people in this league who will take rugby players, who will take soccer players, who will take track stars, who will take wrestlers, who will take people from other sports and give them a look in training camp because they're simply trying to find a diamond in the rough. He'll get an invite. He'll get one. I don't know where it's going to be. He will get one. I do know it was reported and it was up on a picture on Twitter that the Giants did have a representative. They were one of the six or eight teams that had a representative at his pro day workout last week. I do know that. But how far does that go? Can't tell you.
I would love to see us bring him in and the German receiver, Bowringer, in as like undrafted free agents and give him a real chance to make the squad.
Well, they already got Doble coming over from Europe. Do you really? You want another one?
They want these projects.
But Bowringer, his pro day or whatever, he put up a lot of, you know, he's a freak athlete.
I know.
Well, but Nugs, and I understand that, and you know what Paul was saying, I'm going to piggyback off of it.
I'm a fan.
And I get that. No, and I get that, Nugs. And when you look at these numbers on paper, they jump off the page. But remember, there could be a big difference about whether or not those numbers translate to the football field. And that's what the teams have to be in the business of. Do the numbers translate to the X's and O's of football? And that's not so simple. So while it is appealing, and there's no crime in bringing a guy in,
no,
because you got to have a 90-man roster anyway. So you can bring him in,
an undrafted free agent. Too.
Correct. So,
but
I
you know what?
No,
you also have to take into account how many of those total rolls of the dice do you want to take? Because there may be a guy who's even playing 1AA or even Division III football here in the States, who you know didn't play overseas, but maybe he's caught your eye. Remember how Victor Cruz wound up getting a tryout with the Giants, and he was on nobody's board, and he wound up making it. So you're looking for guys and talent anywhere you can find it. I'm not going to be critical of a guy who happened to play overseas, but I think you'd like to believe that you could find more folks here than, you know, going for two overseas wide receivers and then rolling the dice with both of those guys.
You need a number of guys that are polished in terms of playing actual football, too. Just like you want to take some chances on players who don't have the football background but perhaps have the athleticism and the pro day skills.
Well, basketball guys in particular seem to really find their way.
Yeah.
We're going crazy thinking about things that could possibly happen. You know what I'm saying? Who are we going to take in the first round? Who are we going to take in the second round? It's like a mania going on right now before the draft, and I just like to think about stuff that, you know, probably won't happen but could happen and would be a nice story.
Nugs, it's fun. We're not going to criticize you for it. It's fun. Get creative. Have a good time with it, because the bottom line is this is the time you can get creative with the roster, because once it's set in September, you got what you got.
Yeah.
Right. And I got one more question for Lance.
What's up, Nugs?
Lance,
I
need you to do me a favor.
What do we got?
I've got this Thundercats trilogy script that I'm almost done with. I need you to pass it on to Mr. Tisch for me.
Okay. Well, we will do what we can. You can shoot it to me on Twitter. I'll have my agent look it over before I pass it up, just in case it needs some editing, Nugs. You know, I mean, I trust your work, but, you know, if we're going to go that high on the totem pole, we got to make sure that, you know, Microsoft Word was functioning correctly.
Cool.
Only if Lance can be the villain.
Yes, I need to have at least some type of a small role. Appreciate it, Nugs. Thanks so much for weighing in. But Nuggs apparently has a lot of time on his hands. He can write a script.
And scout foreign players.
I tell you, man, we should only.
I got my degree in writing. So
there you go.
I listen to you guys as right.
Nuggs, we should only be as fortunate as you. The man's got versatility. He's got time on his hands.
Oh, my.
That is something. Joe is in New Jersey. We'll see if Joe maybe is trying to put together an Academy Award script. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. You guys make my day. I love listening to your show day in,
well, thanks so
day
much.
Out.
Thank you.
Especially this time of the year. It really is like Christmas. We're expecting Christmas. Hey, just real quick, I'll just touch on Miles Jack real quick. If he really is there at number 10, Paul, like you said, you run to the podium, you make that call. You run out of the building like you just stole something, and I'm driving the getaway car.
You light the fuse on the cannon, and I'll put myself inside the barrel, and we can just shoot me right over to the podium. How about that?
I'm right with you. Trust me. It ain't going to happen, but I like to keep expectations low, so if it were to happen, even better. But, you know, in our dreams. We'll see what happens in a few weeks. I'm looking forward to it. The real reason why I called real quick was offensive tackle in the draft and also tight end. Offensive tackle, I love Ereck Flowers. I thought it was a great pick. I love when they picked him. I loved how he played last year, you know, especially considering he was supposed to be right tackle. They switched him to left tackle his first year out of necessity, playing injured the entire year. I thought the guy was great. You know, great ability, great character guy, great leadership, plays angry, love the guy. However, you know, you look at the offensive line, they've done a nice job building it over the past few years, and you look at two guys like Conklin and Stanley. And I understand that they want to keep Flowers left tackle. I'm totally cool with that. But, you know, injuries happen. And you look at guys like Stanley and Conklin, and I believe that they've been graded or rated as being able to play left or right tackle.
Yes.
You know, the Giants, and I love the philosophy of the defensive line, they like flexibility. So you've got another guy at right tackle who can play left tackle because injuries happen. You know, you never know what's going to happen. Look at Chad Jones, I think was his name, the safety from LSU, the Giants draft.
Oh,
years ago.
What a sad story that was, his car wreck.
Really
yeah,
it really was. It was horrible. And but, you know, he signed his contract, and like a day later, you know, has that, you know, near-fatal injury. And my point being that, you know, really, really bad things can happen even off the field, so you don't know. So it gives you that flexibility. So I appreciate the Giants' philosophy, but, you know, if they take Stanley or Compton, number 10, even though they would put him at right tackle, I got no problem with that because, like I said,
you
I
shouldn't.
Like the flexibility. And I think you're looking at one really good, mean offensive line if you get one of those two guys, Conklin or Stanley. Also, question for you, and then I'll just make a statement, and then I'll let you go and just listen to what you have to say. If they don't take Conklin or Stanley in the first round, are there any offensive tackles that you see, like, in the third or fourth round who could step in to be a right tackle starter their rookie year? I know there's this guy, Willie Beavers, I think his name is, I was reading up on recently, I think out of West Michigan State, Western Michigan or something like that, where I was just reading up his write-up on NFL.com, where he apparently is, you know, could play anywhere on the line.
Well, if you want to go down into the second or third round, and I don't know that Jermaine Ifedi from Texas A&M is going to be there in the third.
Yeah, I've seen that name too.
Okay. He would be a guy who his measurables are 6'6", 324. He's just a big mountain of a man, a kind of anchor who you would like as a right tackle.
Okay.
I could see him potentially, if you wanted to wait a round or two, to pick up somebody who would have a make-it grade. Now, again, he needs a little work. Everybody beyond those top three at tackle are going to need some work. Those other three guys are plug and play, you know, when you consider Tunsil. They're plug and play.
Yeah.
Everybody else is going to need some work. So, I mean, if that's what you're asking me, that'd be a guy I'd look at in round two or three if I needed to go for a tackle and I didn't get one in round one.
Yeah, I mean, the way free agency is looking right now, I don't see them, you know, unless someone gets cut later on, I don't see like a really good right tackle, you know, out there right now, or, you know, someone they can sign for like the next 4 or 5 years, or, you know, maybe someone will get cut later on, but you can't really count on that.
No.
And, you know, I'm cool if they don't go, you know, best player available, I'm totally fine. So if it's not a tackle, that's good with the number 10 pick. But I'm just looking to see, you know, even if they get a guy who's going to be rough around the edges his first year, maybe he can come in and can contribute. Maybe he's a starter, you know, his first year. So, but, you know, I just really want to address that offensive line. I really want to get some road graders out there. I want to give Eli some protection, you know, and, you know, just want to pound the defense with those guys. But and my second point, and then I'll let you go, is Hunter Henry. Like, I'm a big fan of the tight end position, but I agree with the Giants' philosophy that in terms of value, where you're putting your resources, that you can develop these guys. These guys, like, you know, are undrafted free agents or fifth-round picks like Boss and Ballard, and you look at Will Tye, you look at Donnell. You know, they've done a really good job with these guys. But if you have someone like Hunter Henry, and I doubt he'll be there, the number 40 pick, you know, in the second round that the Giants have, but a lot of mock draft simulators that I'm looking at have him falling to, you know, the second round. If Hunter Henry were available in the second round, a guy who can help you
in the passing and the receiving game, I'm not picking him.
Because apparently he's like a Jeremy Shockey. Can you realistically see the Giants taking a Hunter Henry in the second round?
I can't, because I think the Giants, between Will Tye, who showed them a lot in the receiving mode last year, the hopeful comeback of Larry Donnell, who's yet to be cleared by the team doctors with his neck,
and then, of course, they signed
Will Johnson from the Steelers, who is going to be
–
he's an H-back, fullback, tight end. He's a real hybrid. He is primarily a blocker. Now, that's a guy, that's a role that I've been begging for years. Get me a blocking tight end. Well, they got one. Johnson does that. So I think the mixture of those guys, and maybe Matt Lacoste is, again, a rookie. He was my dark horse rookie last year, okay? And I'm so glad that he's still around, because I'd like to see what his upside is. I think the Giants believe they can piece something together at the position.
Joe, to me, the tight end of the safety position, I've been trying to campaign for this to fans a lot, is being treated the same way, in my mind, by the team, where they feel they've got a young nucleus currently on the roster. Obviously, you hope these guys get healthy. That's still a question mark, and it's not 100%. But they're of the mindset, I believe, we're going to give these guys every opportunity to claim a starting job and solidify a roster spot before we start bringing in 17 other prospects, whether it be through the draft or undrafted free agents. So I would look for those two positions. I would first look at what you have currently in-house before you start speculating about who may be coming from the outhouse.
Yeah, I hear you, Lance. Just my thing with the tight end position, just with Hunter Henry specifically, is that you've got a guy out there. You know, same thing with the first round pick in the top 10. You're looking to ideally get a guy out there who's going to be on the field all downs under all situations. You know, with Hunter Henry, I see him as a guy who can be out there, you know, in a receiving situation and also a running situation where he's going to be blocking. You know, so I just see him as someone who's like, he's going to be on the field all the time. That's why I saw, especially in the second round, I thought it would be good value. I don't think he'll be there anyway. I think he'll be gone probably in the late first round, but. You know, c'est la vie. It is what it is. I like our young group of tight ends.
All right, well, thank you.
Let me
just say this to you, Lance. He seemed to be of the mindset to take an offensive tackle in the first round, if at all possible. Well, to me, when you look at the wide receivers, there are a ton of second and third round wide receivers that can make a team and be productive, at least the way I see it. I would rather take, if I'm going to go tackle in the first round, I would think that there's a receiver that I could find that would fill a need for the Giants more than a tight end.
Yeah.
And if they were even close to the same value, I'm taking the receiver.
Well, you have a starting,
you know,
you have a starting tight end on the roster right now.
I mean,
I'm not saying that he's at the pinnacle of his career where he does everything, blocking, receiving, and so forth, to where you want it to be, but you have a starting tight end. Will Tye, Larry Donnell, they can start in this league. Wide receiver, I think right now you have Beckham, you have Dwayne Harris, Victor Cruz is a question mark, so there's no guarantee you have your starting number two.
No.
So therefore, in terms of priority slash best talent available, I think wide receiver clearly projects over tight end if you're in the second and the third round.
And what if, and it's entirely possible because there are a lot of defensive linemen in this draft that are going to go in the first two rounds. What if there's still a really good blue-chip defensive lineman available in round two?
I would take the defensive lineman, too. I don't think you could ever have enough depth at that position.
And that value certainly oversees, or should I say circumvents or supersedes, any value you're going to get out of a tight end.
Without a doubt. And that's why I go back to depth. You also need to go through this draft not just thinking about starters, Paul. You have to say to yourself, where can we also beef up the depth chart? And that specifically goes to the defensive side of things. Remember, I mean, I think they have a great front four, but you're still trying to build the second layer of that front four.
You need a front nine.
Yeah. So you can rotate like Spags did during his first stint as defensive coordinator. You're still looking for a depth in the secondary in terms of specifically the slot corner. So, you know, those are positions that need to be prioritized.
And by the way, boy, I'm glad you just said that because I had let that slip my mind. Slot corner is one of their primary needs in my mind. They've got to come out of the first three rounds, in my opinion, with a guy who can play corner.
So before you even start dreaming about Henry and the tight ends out of Arkansas, I think you need to also think about we also have some starting positions up for grabs right now where a rookie could come in and start day one. There could be a rookie corner to be the slot role.
No question.
And I think there's value in the second or third round to find that corner. Let's head back to the phone lines. Marco's in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hi.
Doing well, Marco. How's things with you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I'm real excited that the draft is getting closer now. And I hope to call in a few times before then. I have a lot of thoughts on this first pick and the rounds after that. Guys, offensive line on this team, as it stands right now, am I wrong to think that the O-line is not that far away?
Well, the left side is solidified right now.
And Richburg?
Yeah, but
well, I consider that part of the left side, but that's
okay.
Fine.
All right. The
two spots on the right side are question marks right now, and to steal a word that my friend just used, depth, is also a question mark. They're bringing in bodies right now, but they've got to enhance not only the two starters on the right side, and maybe that does come from within, but they've also got to enhance the three or four backup spots behind them.
Well, this is just what I'm thinking, and I'm not disagreeing with your line of thinking, Paul. When I look at two guys that I think will be there at 10, Ronnie Stanley and Shaq Lawson, I think will be there. I think they could be penciled in as productive players, productive with the arrow pointing up, to be very, very good.
Yes.
Not giving us any reasons to worry. But I'm really jammed up about this having this number 10 pick, and I keep thinking I want to come away with this with a high ceiling, high level defensive player. And after watching our defense last year, and I know, JPP had we had issues there. We had issues with depth at defensive end. Landon Collins was a rookie. The linebacker position was in flux all year. I realize that. But I think at this number 10 pick, because if you now, and I trust that JPP is going to come back and have a good year, and Hankins as well. Also, I should have mentioned him as a guy that we lost last year. Those two players are both going into their last year of their contract. I think this is a real opportunity to come away with someone, a high-level defensive player there, to preserve a loss potentially with Hankins and JPP. And I'm also thinking that there's a huge need at corner. There's a huge need at slot corner, someone that
Absolutely.
Can move around. Someone that could be an impact player in the secondary with Collins, DRC down the road moving on. That's kind of how I'm looking at 10. So Hargraves keeps jumping out to me.
I love Hargraves. Love Hargraves, but he's not going to be there.
I'd be surprised.
No way is he going to be there.
Well, then you guys could play the game of who might be there. But then, I don't know. Maybe Leonard Floyd is the guy. Maybe Leonard Floyd is at least the guy that fits into what I'm saying, someone that the arrow is like skyrocketing high. I don't know. I just think I think that offensive line, wide receiver, are two positions that maybe I'd feel really, really excited about if you came away with them in the second and third round. But the first round, I want that. I want that high ceiling. That guy that's going to make you pop, really.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If you really want to get that stud offensive tackle, it's got to be one of those top three guys, because now once you go beyond that, now they're not quite blue-chip plug-and-play guys. You know, there's only three of them, Tunsil, Stanley, and Conklin. Once you get beyond that, now you got to do some elbow work. elbow grease and stuff to get these guys coached up. They're not blue chippers. You know what I mean?
One thing about that, though, and I understand that, Paul, but one thing, we have a blue chip left tackle that we just spent a high draft.
Don't have one at right tackle.
I realize that, but back-to-back years, I mean, there's so many needs on this team right now. You know?
I get you. I get you. Here's where we will totally agree. And I'm not telling you you're wrong, but here's where we will totally agree. At number 10, you've got to get an impact player, a guy who is a Pro Bowl caliber player, and you anticipate to be on your team for a good 6, 7, 8 years down the road. You have to believe that the guy you get is that kind of player. And if it's not, then you missed.
Well, and I'll say this, and then I'll jump off. I agree with you. That's why I don't think Laquon Treadwell should be in the conversation. We have arguably the best wide receiver in the game. Grab someone in the second or third round to come in.
I agree with you totally. Yeah, I agree with you totally. Plenty of wide receivers in the second or third round who can play. I have no problem with passing on Treadwell.
Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you this week.
Appreciate
it. Bye, Marco. Appreciate the phone call.
I had made a mistake when I was on NFL Network, I guess a week or two ago, and we were talking about potential guys, and I meant to say Hargraves, and I accidentally said Treadwell in the conversation. And after I got off the air, I said to myself, how did I screw that up? Because I was talking about Treadwell with someone just before I went on the air.
He's on your mind.
And he slipped into the conversation. There's no way that I personally would take Treadwell at 10.
I think defensive line, offensive line makes sense. I think cornerback makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you could go wrong in a variety of different positions. Then you look at other positions where you say, well, you know, there's some depth or maybe there's such a drop-off that you're going to wind up maybe getting good value in the second or third round, so it's probably smarter to wait for those positions. But in that 10th overall pick spot, I think there's quality offensive linemen that could very well be available. I think there's quality defensive linemen that could be available. I think there may be a corner depending on who falls. And I wouldn't necessarily rule out linebacker depending on how things play out.
Right.
Those, to me, are those four positions.
And the Giants are fortunate enough, and you hate to say this because it means they didn't play well last year, but to be at number 10, you are pretty sure that they're going to get the Pro Bowl caliber impact kind of guy at one of those spots at 10. If they were 17, I don't think I could say that with much certainty. Well, but they're not 17, they're 10.
Because that would be a few more teams in front of you that would probably gobble up some of the prospects you're thinking may fall to you in that 17
and,
area.
You know, like I said, you don't want to miss on this first pick for sure. In fact, you don't want to miss on any of them. You want to make as many hits as you can get your hands on. But even the pick at 40, Lance, is going to be a very, very important pick for this team.
And we always talk about this. You know, everybody.
Jerry Reese's first three rounds are always you know.
Well, but everybody gets so caught up in the 10th overall pick, just like everybody gets caught up with the starters on a team. I'm always talking about where you really make your true colors and your true value is what you do in 3, 4, 5, 6, those rounds.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you got to hit the jackpot, and you got to find players that are going to contribute. Because if you look at the Seahawks, if you look at the Broncos, if you look at the Panthers, if you look at some of these teams that have been in the mix or have gone into the Super Bowl in the last few years, even the Patriots, there's at least some late rounders that have been key contributors on that team.
Understand this. In the first three rounds, the Giants' picks are 10, 40, and 71. 71. You're going into this thing saying you got three picks out of the top 71 prospects coming out of school. Wow. You really got to take advantage of that.
Well, but I think to even put things in better perspective, Paul, because you may not know where 40 falls and 71 falls in the second or third round, you're looking at a top 10 pick in every single round. So that's what I think really puts things in perspective. You know, you're high up in every one of those top three rounds. Actually, in the second round, it'd be the equivalent of the 9th overall pick.
Yes.
And then in the third round, it's the equivalency of the 8th overall pick
that round. You know, which is why, by the way, you know, I had this argument with Anita last week. I'm not trading up to get Miles Jack. If he falls to 10, I'm taking him. But I'm not trading up to get him because I'm probably going to have to give up at least that third, if not more. I don't want to do that. I want three of the top 71 players.
Because I'd rather take three quality players and add it to my roster than put all my chips in one and bank on one who does look great on paper, but you're still playing the guessing game.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Let's try to close out the program here on Twitter real quickly. I know a number of you weighing in with your tweets who wanted to get involved in a variety of different conversations we've had here on the program. Big Dash 0708 at ColeWiss88. Teron Beckham talking about Odell Beckham's Cousins, not a fullback in his mind. He says his numbers are crazy. Did he play high school ball at all? Yes, he did play high school football.
Yes.
He didn't play college ball. He was thinking about going to a D3 school.
Right.
But he never obviously fulfilled that obligation. But to answer your question, he did play high school football. So he's got that background. But we're talking about some time being removed from being a high school football player and being involved
in that. And quite frankly, a fullback has to have a special kind of mentality anyway.
Absolutely. You need to love contact. You need to want contact.
And you need to understand that maybe you're not going to touch the ball very much either.
That's true. Yeah. Meaning, you know, it's almost like the equivalency of playing defense in basketball. You have to want to play defense. You have to want to rebound the ball. There are certain things, yes, you can teach players, but half the battle is the desire. The fullback position.
Sometimes more than half.
Correct. The fullback position, I think, is the best parallel to that. The desire and the want has to be so ahead of the X's and O's.
Yep.
And that has to be figured out if you bring a player like that in and whether or not it translates. Looking through some of the other comments here on Twitter, Ali at Ali R. Jackson. If Miles Jack is gone, what do you guys think of the Giants taking Darren Lee with the number 10 pick, the versatile linebacker out of Ohio State, who certainly has gotten a lot of compliments from coaching staffs, NFL scouts, because of what he can do east to west on the football field?
Really good player. I think the Giants can get a higher level value impact guy at another position than Lee at number 10. My opinion.
Ben at Ben underscore Covey U. I always butcher his name regardless of how many times he tells me.
He's a good Twitter guy, though.
No, Ben's
he
a regular,
hits me up a lot.
For some reason, I always butcher his last name. So he'll probably correct me at one point. Miles Jack will most likely be gone. But the point is, it's possible. He says that the scenario depicted by Casserly isn't that far-fetched. So just
it's not.
Out of curiosity, I didn't look at it that closely. Let's look at Casserly's
mock
draft.
Running out of time. Go
but
through that real fast.
Before we wrap up. Okay, so Tunsley's got as the number one overall.
Okay.
That's fine. Carson Wentz number two.
You
fine.
Can see that.
DeForest Buckner at number three.
Not a stretch.
I don't think that's a stretch. Bosa, number four. That's
not a stretch at
either.
All.
Ramsey at five. I mean, I could see Ramsey going even higher than
again,
five.
Again, not a stretch.
Not a stretch. Stanley at six. I don't know if Stanley's going to go that high. But
Ravens really do need an offensive lineman, though. And if they strongly believe that he's a plug-and-play left tackle, they could take him.
Absolutely. Now, here's where Casserly differs just glancing at his fellow colleagues. He's got another quarterback going in the top seven.
Right.
So that helps the cause of Miles Jack falling.
Mm-hmm.
He has Goff going to the Niners at seven. If you look at the rest of the projected drafts here, well, I take that back. Charles Davis has Goff going at eight, and so does Bucky Brooks. And they do have Carson Wentz. But let me see. Does Daniel Jeremiah have another quarterback going? No, Jeremiah only has one quarterback going compared to the other guys. Okay, so after Goff, Ezekiel Elliott going to the Eagles at eight, which I think is very realistic.
I think that's going
to
happen.
Hargraves ninth to the Bucks, which I think is also
absolutely
extremely
could
realistic.
See that.
And then Jack to 10. So it's not much of a stretch. It to me, the biggest maybe stretch here, and I know you said the Ravens need an offensive lineman, I think he's got Stanley a little high, in my opinion, going six. That's where I think you could switch Stanley and Jack if I were to make a tweak to his mock draft. Other than that, I think all the players are decent fits.
Well, if you're going to say there's only one questionable pick there, that tells you the odds aren't that bad.
Well, of course, all it takes is one team taking a flyer on a player we didn't anticipate, and
you know,
all of a sudden Jack is in the 10 spot.
And I would argue to you that I think Stanley is good enough to go there, because if you think he's a plug-and-play left tackle for a decade, that's not bad value. You know, it's really not, especially for a team that really needs to protect Flacco, because he's their franchise guy, and they need to know that he's going to be healthy for the rest of that contract.
Absolutely.
So.
And that is a team that did have protection issues and also issues sometimes with running the football. So I could certainly see them going the way of an offensive lineman. However, I could also see them going the way of Miles Jack at the linebacker position, as I mentioned earlier. So that's sort of a
only thing
a
I
twist.
Know. Big Blue Kickoff Live will be here Monday to Friday, each and every day, right through the draft. That's a guarantee, folks, no matter who anybody picks.
With that being said, hope you enjoyed the program. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll be back tomorrow at noon Eastern. Enjoy the rest of your Monday.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.